We'll talk about some of the latest in state politics during this edition of the State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 8.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, August 8th. We will talk with our guest about tomorrow's primary election and some other issues making news in state politics, including his own piece on the four key issues that state Democrats plan to focus on to defeat Republicans this fall. Those four issues include public schools and funding or support for the UW system. And we will welcome your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We're going to start with tomorrow's primary elections, and I wonder if you are planning on voting. What is the race that's bringing you to the polls? Let us know. Let's welcome our guest. Very happy to have with us Steve Walters, a senior producer at Wisconsin Eye and the former Madison Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. His recent column, Democrats Bet on Four Issues Against Republicans, ran in several newspapers around the state, and we have posted it on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Good morning.
Joy, thanks so much for having me back. I really appreciate it.
We are happy to have you back. Well, let's talk first about Election Day in Wisconsin tomorrow, the primary election. The State Elections Commission is predicting a 16% voter turnout. That's not very many people.
Nope, that's only one in seven voters will go to the polls tomorrow, and that's pretty low. It really is. We've had different dates for the primaries, and now because of the need for our veterans to vote and get their ballots counted in time, we're having a summer primary.
So, let's talk just a couple of the key races on the ballot, depending on where you live. There is a Democratic race in Milwaukee for Lena Taylor's Senate seat. She is being challenged by State Representative Mandela Barnes. Taylor, in simple terms, regarded more as a moderate, while Barnes is more of a progressive. What's your read on the significance of this race?
Well, we're talking here, Joy, about the 4th Senate District in the city of Milwaukee, as you noted. And to get ready for the primary, I interviewed about 70 primary candidates for Wisconsin Eye, including both Representative Barnes and Senator Taylor. And Representative Barnes is bringing a pretty aggressive charge that Senator Taylor voted for the concealed carry law and that she's not been an effective voice for this for inner city voters. And Senator Taylor is saying, I'm a fighter, I'm going to stay a fighter. So this is quite an interesting inter-party fight there in the city of Milwaukee. It's just intriguing to me. Representative Barnes could have stayed in the assembly. He opted to challenge Senator Taylor. So I can't call this one, not being that familiar with inner city of Milwaukee politics.
But interesting in that we have a Democrat being primaried by a more, I guess, liberal or progressive Democrat. That's happening as well in the 3rd Congressional District, isn't it, where Ron Kind is being challenged by someone on his left.
Yes. About 10 days ago, I interviewed Ron Kind, and the issue there, he's being challenged by Eau Claire retired history teacher Myron Buchholz. And Mr. Buchholz is a Bernieite, and he's coming after Congressman Kind on TPP. But I sat Congressman Kind down and said, give us the ringing defense of TPP. And he actually had some pretty, it's the best argument yet I've heard for TPP. But Mr. Buchholz is bringing a Bernie challenge to Representative Kind. And it's interesting because the winner here, and Congressman Kind is favored, having decades of experience, will not be opposed in the November 8th general election. So this is a primary that will decide who will represent the 3rd Congressional District.
And on the other side of the aisle, House Speaker Paul Ryan, 1st Congressional District representative, is being challenged by an opponent, Paul Nealon.
Delavan, businessman, an inventor, several patents. and he's waging a pretty aggressive anti-TPP, and he's gone down to the nation's border with Mexico, and one of his ads says that Congressman Ryan has sold out on the issue of immigration and not been tough enough. So Nehlen is really attracting some national attention. I think the question here, if Congressman Ryan wins, does he get 55, 65, or 70% of the vote on Tuesday? But there's going to national eyes are following this. And so it's so intriguing because Mr. Trump last week said he wasn't ready to endorse Ryan. And then on Friday when he went to Green Bay, he said, I endorse Ryan.
What's your take on that? I mean, he was saying, I'm not quite ready yet. And then he did, when he's in Green Bay, did endorse him.
Okay, dial back about 2 or 3 months when Congressman Ryan was asked, are you ready to endorse Mr. Trump? He's not quite ready to do that.
Same words, yeah.
Yes, same words. So it's very intriguing because Mr. Trump endorsed also Senator McCain of Arizona and Senator Kelly Ayotte of New Hampshire. So you have this, but let's not forget there's also a Democratic primary in the first district featuring Democrats Ryan Selene, who's a retired from the military, and Tim Brew, who's an engineer. But that Democratic race is attracting none of the attention of Speaker Ryan versus Paul Nehlen.
Sure. And whoever the Democratic victor is, especially if it's against Paul Ryan in the first district, that's Paul Ryan's Republican stronghold, isn't it?
Well, especially when you realize the large amounts of money that Mr. Ryan has raised for the not only the primary, we've seen his ads, and in the general, he's very well funded.
Yeah.
The Democrats are not going to be very well funded.
House Speaker, Congressman Ryan's taking this challenge seriously, though. You are seeing his ads. He's appearing on Wisconsin Public Radio talking about the issues.
He doesn't want to be cantered. Remember, go back to U.S. House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, who underestimated his primary opponent, another Tea Party populist type, and was defeated. So Mr. Ryan doesn't want to be cantered.
Well, Donald Trump, as we mentioned, was in Green Bay on Friday.
With Mr. Pence.
And presumably choosing Green Bay in part because that's the 8th congressional district and considered a swing district for the state. Yeah.
Yeah. If you look at our statewide races, the Fox Valley, all the way up and down, can pretty much decide who wins. I mean, the Democratic base is, of course, Dane County and Milwaukee County, and then the GOP base is the WOW counties, Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington. So Brown County in the Fox Valley is extremely important, and that's the reason that Mr. Trump and Mr. Pence came back there for the first visit since Mr. Trump became the nominee. And it's also interesting because this was Mr. Pence's second visit to Wisconsin, Mr. Trump's first, and on the same day, the Democratic vice presidential nominee, Senator Tim Kaine, was in Milwaukee. So although I know some don't think we're a battleground state, I think we are. And I think the four visits, Pence twice, Trump and Pence and Kaine, indicates that we are battleground status.
Well, the very first visit by Hillary Clinton was supposed to be Green Bay with President Obama.
Yes, and they were supposed to go to Green Bay, and in light, I think it was of the Pulse shootings at the
The Orlando shootings, yeah.
You bet.
They postponed that.
It's so intriguing because four of our incumbent 8 U.S. representatives had primaries. Sean Duffy has a primary. Mr. Raihala, I'm sorry if I may.
Raihala, it's something Raihala. Like that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So Mr. Ryan has a primary, Congressman Kaine has a primary, and let's not forget Gwen Moore is being challenged again by former State Senator Gary George. But I looked it up yesterday, and 2 years ago, Gary George got less than 30% of the vote when he again challenged 4th District Congressman Gwen Moore.
Well, the 8th District is an open seat. There are 3 Republicans who are on the ballot in the primary tomorrow, and the winner will go up against Democratic Tom Nelson, the Outagamie County Executive.
Yep.
What's your read on that race and the 3 Republicans going for?
Okay. Mike Gallagher has been in Washington. He has a long record of military service. He was an intelligence officer, but he's up against State Senator Frank Lissay, who has a nickname for Mr. Gallagher, D.C. Mike. because Mike doesn't have hasn't been in the district lately. And then the final candidate is Terry McNulty, a local businessman who's not as well-funded. It's so intriguing. Outgoing Congressman Reid Ribble made no secret of his opposition to Donald Trump, still opposes Donald Trump, and he's endorsed Mr. Gallagher. So this is just a fascinating race. It's just very, 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 very interesting. When I interviewed all three candidates for Wisconsin, I asked them all, do you own property in the 8th Congressional District? Mr. McNulty said, I do. Mr. Gallagher said, I do. Mr. Lissay said, no, I don't.
Yeah, he has a place in Racine.
He splits his time between his wife and their blended family in Racine, and he has rental property in the 8th District.
Well, we'll have to watch and see what happens tomorrow, the election, primary elections tomorrow. We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll be back and we'll talk more with Steve Walters about the issues that Democrats are counting on winning them some seats in the fall elections. This is our State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Steve Walters during this State Capitol Report. He is a senior producer at Wisconsin Eye, former Madison bureau chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We are talking with him about the latest in state politics and talking with him about the primary election going on tomorrow in the state. Do you know who you're voting for? Did you even know there was a primary election? Will you be voting? Tell us why. We'll also, in just a bit, talk about Steve's recent piece, his recent column, Democrats Bet on Four Issues Against Republicans. And welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Well, just before news, we talked about most of the significant races on the primary ballot tomorrow, Steve, but we forgot one. Our former U.S. Senator Russ Feingold, who is certainly in the news for his race against Senator Ron Johnson, actually faces a primary challenger himself.
Yes, Joy, he does. He faces voters. When you enter the voting booth tomorrow, you may be surprised that Russ Feingold faces a primary from Scott Harbach. He's a private investigator from Kenosha. He's running kind of a low-profile campaign. Wisconsin I asked him to tape an interview, and he didn't respond. He's kind of, it's low budget, but as I drove into your show this morning, I saw that his campaign has posted now new signs. The motto, shock 'em, on tomorrow, August 9th, shock 'em.
So, in essence, elect me rather than Russ Feingold to be your nominee.
Right. Yeah. But the focus here is November 8th, Feingold versus Johnson.
Yeah. And I actually have seen some posts from some Democrats saying, hey, everybody, Feingold has a Democratic challenger. Let's not forget about him and let's vote for him in the election tomorrow.
Yep. So voters may be surprised. Mr. Feingold does have a primary challenge tomorrow from, as I said, Scott Harbach, a private investigator from Kenosha.
All right, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Talking with Wisconsin Eye senior producer Steve Walters. And now let's talk about some of these issues that state Democrats are using to try to win some seats from Republicans this fall. And your piece, you mentioned in the piece, Steve, that for one, funding for the UW system is one of those issues. Why is that one of the issues?
Well, it's an issue because as recently as 2004-2005, the state aid, state GPR, general purpose revenue for the UW system made up about 25% of the UW budget, systems budget for all 26 campuses. And that has dropped now to 16%. And when I interviewed the chancellor at UW-Green Bay, he said that their GPR allotment is 14%. So there's been a tremendous drop. In essence, the UW system is getting $1.1 billion for the last few years. And the $250 million cut, now that's over 2 years in the current budget, has forced some major cutbacks in staffing classes, layoffs on the 26 system campuses. And it's also tremendously fascinating because Governor Walker last week announced that his next budget will continue for a fifth and sixth year the freeze on resident undergrad tuition. So the other side of that is, okay, Governor, if you freeze tuition, resident undergrad tuition, what's going to be the number of state aid, GPR aid in your next budget for the UW system? Are you going to be able to give them an increase from about $1.1 billion? If so, how much of an increase? A cost of living 2%, a 4%?
Is he saying what it's going to be?
No. He's hinted that if there's some accountability, new accountability levels, he's willing to give the UW system more. But we haven't seen the number, and we won't see the number until late January or early February. And there's so many competing interests. Medicaid, the cost projections of Medicaid have been called unsustainable. So you have Medicaid, which provides health care for 1 in 5 Wisconsin residents, poor, elderly, and disabled, competing with the UW system, competing with school aides. So the next budget's going to absolutely be very fascinating in terms of policy decisions.
Well, I did read in response to the governor saying he wants to continue the tuition freeze from some chancellors at some other outside of Madison and Milwaukee chancellors saying, I think it was UW-Eau Claire's chancellor saying, we are at bare bones. This is going to devastate us. If you don't increase funding and you freeze tuition, we're not going to make it, essentially.
Yeah, in my recent statewide tour interviewing candidates, I interviewed the chancellor at Stout in Green Bay, and they pretty much said that, look, we are down to bare bones here, and we really hope that if the tuition freeze is continued, that there's a bump in what has been state aid for the UW system. We really need it. That's their words, not mine.
So what kind of accountability does the governor think he needs beyond what's already been done?
Well, I think he wants to see more benchmarking and more cooperation between the tech colleges. The tech colleges have received a large boost in state aid, part of that to control property taxes. So you have a new linkage being sought between the UW system's 26 campuses and our tech colleges.
So the Democrats are thinking that this particular issue, support for the UW system, is one that the public is on their side and that Republicans could suffer because of this?
This is one of the great unknowns. There are two unknowns that I related in the column, or tried to. The first is funding for K-12 schools. And when parents send their kids back into the classrooms here in a few weeks or even a few days, if parents sense that there's no longer the resources in the classroom for the teacher, support in terms of aids or technology, then that issue may score for Democrats. If there's a sense that K-12 aid from the state has really cut beyond the extraneous, and now you're down into really hurting classroom, then that's one issue that could resonate. But that's done on a parent-by-parent basis when they take their kid back to school this fall. You have to recognize that K-12 aid is still the largest spending program in the state's GPR budget, and it's going to stay that way. Also, the DPI recently put out a press release, a bump of $108 million an increase in state aid means that 61% of school districts will get more state aid in the next school year. So that works against the Democrats' argument that K-12 has not been properly funded.
Yeah, so that's Democrats think that, the public is on their side when it comes to public school funding and UW system funding.
Yeah, and the other wild card here is the increasing number of referendums that are passing to support local school spending and in some cases to keep districts afloat.
Yeah. You had the four different issues, and I guess I just started out of order. I started with UW system. Public schools is another. Two others were open government and tax cuts. What do you mean by the open government issue? Why Democrats are looking at that?
Let's go back to the July 2015 vote on the state budget. It happened around the 4th of July weekend, and all 12 Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee voted for one of the biggest rollbacks in our open records law that has ever been presented. And it wasn't debated extensively, and it was suddenly loaded to the budget by the 12 Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee. And within hours, Governor Walker had to walk it back, and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald and Speaker Voss said, this is going to be dropped immediately, and it was dropped. But it would have made off-limits many legislative records, interactions with their constituents, who do they talk to about drafting bills, and it also would have extended to the governor's office and the Department of Administrations. It was a massive rollback in our tradition of open government, but it did not become law. So had it become law, it would have become more of a formidable campaign issue for Democrats. So all Democrats can say now is, look what they tried to do, but the Republicans can say it didn't become law.
And then you also have tax cuts for the wealthy as one of the other issues that Democrats will be focusing on against Republicans this fall. What, how so?
About 3 or 4 years ago, the Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee passed the Manufacturing and Ag Credit. And if you, it started out real slow in terms of costing the state treasury, but now it's up to a projected $209 million when 2017 taxes are filed. And Representative Gordon Hintz, Democrat from Oshkosh, asked the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, which relied on Department of Revenue numbers, who will benefit the most from this manufacturing and ag credit. And the Fiscal Bureau analysis, which is based on DOR numbers, 11 taxpayers who each have taxable incomes of $35 million or more a year will get $21.5 million of that tax break of $209. But it's, if you go deeper, if you dig deeper in that, Fiscal Bureau paper says, overall, taxpayers with taxable incomes of more than $500,000 per year, this is adjusted gross incomes of more than $500,000 per year, will get 88% of that $209 million tax break. So will that issue resonate? Because Democrats will say, that's unfair. We need to divert some of this $209 million to school aids, to Medicaid, to health care. So the question I raised in the column, will that resonate with voters?
We are talking with Steve Walters, who is a senior producer at Wisconsin Eye, about his recent column, Democrats Bet on Four Issues Against Republicans. It ran in several newspapers around the state. We have posted it on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, and we wonder if these are the issues that resonate with you. Do you think Democrats can perhaps pick up some seats focusing in on these issues like public school funding or support, UW system support, open government issues, or tax cuts for the wealthy? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's take a call. We have Gordon in Wisconsin Rapids with us first. Hi, Gordon.
Hey, good morning, folks. Thanks for taking my call. Sure appreciate it. Say, I like that tuition freeze. It's a great thing. You know, my kid is going to be a freshman at UW Stevens Point. It's going to be like $15,000 per year. And that's it's a lot of money. We've got to pay it back. And I thought the Democrats were for, free education. So what about the free education, Bernie, and everybody's talking about?
Well, Gordon, thanks very much for your call. That's not getting a lot of traction here. That was a Bernie idea. And when you look at the numbers, what that would cost, who's going to pay it, and what major shifts in taxes would have to be enacted to pay for that? So, yes, Bernie offered that, put that on the table, but he's not the nominee, and nobody is seriously considering in our capital the free tuition Bernie plan.
Now, Democrats are not saying that they're against a tuition freeze. What I've read is that Democrats are saying, hey, a tuition freeze is a good idea if the taxpayer support of the universities is increased.
Yeah, and that's the other part of that. If you freeze tuition, then what's the other part in the governor's proposed budget for 2017-2019? Do you take the $1.1 billion that we're now giving the UW system and boost it significantly to offset the impact of freezing tuition? So that's the unknown here, and we won't know that till early next year.
Yeah, so, and Gordon has dropped off, but he loves the idea of a tuition freeze because his daughter going to UW Stevens Point costs $15,000, I think he said. What are chancellors, you said, though, I don't know, you didn't talk to somebody from UW Stevens Point, but if if there is a tuition freeze and there is not increased taxpayer support, what's that going to mean for a university like UW-Stevens Point?
Well, you're right. I haven't yet. I haven't had a chance. I hope to interview the chancellor of UW-Stevens Point at some point. But they have no choice but to continue to review which programs have the least students, and again go back to staffers and offer some buyouts. So they will continue to do cutbacks, and that's just a fact of life. If there's no major increase in state aid and we continue to have a tuition freeze.
Let's go next to Nancy in Milwaukee. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning. It is my thought, and many other people's thoughts, that long ago the Electoral College should have been gotten away with. My feeling about the strife in today's campaign is that if everybody who supported Bernie Sanders wrote in his name, and the list of those names was larger than either votes for Hillary or Trump, would that not be a clear-cut conclusion that indeed the populist vote is more important and the Electoral College should be done away with?
Not exactly state politics, but what do you have any thoughts on this?
Thank you for your call. One poll that I recently saw said that up to 90% of Sanders supporters will end up voting for Hillary Clinton. So I don't think that's a reasonable scenario, with all due respect. But just to PS, Wisconsin will cast 10 Electoral College votes. You need 270 to be elected president. And that's why I think Wisconsin is a battleground, because by picking Virginia Senator Tim Kaine, there's 14 electoral votes in Virginia. That increased the need of the Trump-Pence ticket to win Wisconsin, to kind of offset Virginia. But with all due respect, I don't think that's a reasonable scenario, since most Sanders supporters are now indicating they're going to vote for Hillary on November 8th.
Thank you, Nancy, for the call. We have Matt, who emails, Republicans have so effectively gerrymandered legislative districts that the Democratic issues are largely moot. Just look at the outline of my district, which is the 86th. They literally divided Marshfield in half. So, Steve, because of gerrymandering, things are going to stay the same because those districts are largely safe for Republicans or vice versa Democrats?
Well, thanks for the email. The Democrats have targeted, Senate Democrats have targeted four seats. The 18th Senate seat, where Republican Senator Gudex is retiring, Tom Tiffany, who represents Northeast Wisconsin, Sheila Harsdorf, whose district borders Minnesota in western Wisconsin, and Senator Luther Olson in the middle of our state. State Democratic Chairman Martha Lanning, when she spoke to the State Democratic Convention, said, I don't think it's feasible to win the Assembly and win the Senate this time, but let's win the Senate and get a toehold and then make major gains. 2018 elections, and 2018, obviously, Democratic race for governor. Governor Walker has indicated he would like to seek a third term. We don't yet know who are serious candidates on the Democratic side. So Martha Lanning says, let's do it in steps. Let's make gains in the Assembly in 2016. Let's make gains in the Senate, potentially take over the Senate. Let's win the governorship in 2018. Then, when the next redistricting lines are drawn after the 2020 census, Democrats will be a full and equal partner, and we will not be, to use your term, gerrymandered again. So that's kind of the steps that she has outlined.
Well, we're going to check news again from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll take more calls with your questions and views about these issues that Steve Walters says are issues that Democrats are betting on against Republicans this fall. Those issues include funding or support for public schools and for the UW system and for open government and tax cuts for the wealthy. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Steve Walters is senior producer at Wisconsin Eye, former Madison bureau chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and his recent column is posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about state politics during this edition of our State Capitol Report. Our guest is Steve Walters, who is a senior producer at Wisconsin Eye. He wrote a recent column, Democrats Bet on Four Issues Against Republicans, and we have posted that piece on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Those four key issues included support for K through 12 education, public schools, and the UW system, support for the UW system. Also included open government issues and tax the rich issues. But Steve, you mentioned during the news that you have limits in terms of letters for or words for your columns, and there are other issues you think the Democrats are going to use.
Well, I think there are other issues that could resonate locally in some of these races. Let's talk about transportation funding. We're borrowing in this current budget $850 million. And the governor has said when Transportation Secretary Gottlieb submits his next 2017-2019 budget on September 15th, it will not include a gas tax. It will not include an increase in the $75 you and I pay to register our vehicle. And so that's going to be very, very interesting in terms of financing transportation future. Do we raise taxes and fees, which a governor doesn't want to do? Do we delay projects? Do we again borrow? And as I talk to some of these 70 candidates in the primary, Democrats are more willing to say, hey, we want to be a part of, we are willing to be a part of a package that has some fee and tax increases because we don't want to borrow anymore. So, but it's so interesting. You have this developing schism between Assembly Speaker Voss and Co-Chairman John Nygren, who have said the Assembly may move a long-term transportation funding budget that goes against the governor's wishes. So the transportation issue, my point is, doesn't cut cleanly Democrat versus Republicans. Now that you have some Republicans.
What's your analysis of why Assembly Speaker Robin Voss would put forth a budget that defies the governor's wishes?
Well, Speaker Voss clearly objects to another borrowing $850 million. Joy, the context here is by the budget year 2019, 25% of our gas tax revenues and vehicle registration fees are going to do nothing but pay off the debt, existing bonds. And many candidates that I've talked to don't consider this responsible. So they are looking for a long-term funding package that, and they're going to get Democratic support. But the Democrats are not going to go out there and say, let's raise taxes and fees unless there are Republican votes to do that. So transportation funding is not a clean D versus R issue since you have this schism between Governor Walker, no tax and fee increases, and Speaker Voss and Finance Co-Chair Nygren.
You have other issues, but we have other callers. So let's go to Brian in Milwaukee right now. Hi, Brian.
Hi. I just wanted to make a few statements. I've been a lifelong Democrat living in Milwaukee. I think the issues that your guest has outlined for the Democratic Party, again, spells failure. They are not issues that people are generally worked up about. You bring up the UW system. They have $1 billion slush fund. I think the UW system is going to be okay. People are worried about safety, economics, jobs. I have not heard Democrats talk about jobs in forever. And you wonder why we keep losing elections? This is the reason. Number two, I have got a circle of influence of many friends that are Democrats. We really enjoyed Bernie Sanders and what he brought to the table. And if you think 90% of Bernie Sanders are going to vote for Hillary Clinton, I really think your statistics are skewed. So
Where do you get those statistics, Steve Walters?
That was the last national poll I heard. Brian, thanks you very much for your call. Let me deal with one question that you raised. Safety in Milwaukee. Gary George, who's challenging Congresswoman Gwen Moore, his number one issue is he wants a state of emergency in Milwaukee. He wants the National Guard, the FBI, many more law enforcement to, well, he calls it a state of emergency, and he just wants them to patrol the streets of Milwaukee to cut down on some of these horrific acts of violence. Now, in my interview with former State Senator George, I said, how are the issues any different in Milwaukee in violence, in terms of violence from Chicago, which just had another tragic police shooting, or some of these other major issues? And he said, I'm trying to represent Milwaukee, and we need a state of emergency. So I want the FBI, the National Guard, all these other law enforcement types. So safety, former Senator George is raising the safety issue in Milwaukee. But your other point that jobs in Central City, Milwaukee, yeah, everybody says let's get them, but specifically how we get them, there's no specific plans.
Yeah. Briefly on the UW system has $1 billion slush fund. That's not exactly true, is it?
Well, actually, that slush fund has been cut down. But you know what? I still think it's pretty close to it. Mm-hmm. So your caller, Brian, in Milwaukee, there is a feeling on some of the legislature that, yes, we found the $1 billion slush fund, and it has been cut down. But there is some Republicans who say it can be cut down even more. So thanks, Brian, for raising that issue.
Let's go next to John in Janesville. Hello, John.
How are you doing?
Good. What's your point?
I was wondering, the governor had a balanced budget not too long ago. He said that we were doing fine. And now all of a sudden we're so far behind. And he gave this big tax break to the rich people. But now we're millions of dollars behind here and $1 billion there. How did all of a sudden we get so far behind if we were just perfect not too long ago?
Thanks, John, very much for your question. The last numbers that I saw is GPR, which is the state checkbook, tax collections are running at about 4%, which is what had been projected. We don't know yet if we're going to have a major, we're going to have a surplus, a minor deficit, or a large deficit. Because I just want to remind you that the current fiscal year, which ends the two-year budget cycle, is June 30th. And so we're a ways away from that. But so far in this calendar year, tax collections are running about 4% up. The Department of Revenue publishes those quarterly, if not monthly. So we don't know yet how deep any potential deficit is. We won't know that until next spring, when first the governor releases his budget and budget estimates, and then the Fiscal Bureau comes out with those, its own independent budget, estimating both spending and tax collections next spring.
Thank you, John. Gary on Facebook says, I don't see anything in the Democrats' plans about creating jobs and improving the economy, bringing in new industry. This, of course, does not surprise me since the Democrat, he writes, party has not represented working people for quite a while now. Their main concerns continue to be global warming, gun control, and gay rights.
Assembly Democratic Leader Barca and Senate Democratic Leader Schilling have come up with plans that they say would create jobs. That's debatable. There are websites that you can go to look at that. You may not be impressed, but they have offered what they say are plans to create jobs. But that's so very, very hard to realize whether they're going to be successful. But Senator Schilling and Representative Barca have offered, and their caucuses have offered, plans that they say would be good for our economy and create jobs in Wisconsin.
But they're not putting on this list, or you're not putting on the list of the issues Democrats are focusing on as winners in the fall elections for Democrats. The I guess, the performance of Wisconsin when it comes to comparing Wisconsin to other states. That we used to hear that all the time. Well, we're not doing as well as neighboring states in terms of job growth.
Our household income is lower than Minnesota. Excuse me for interrupting you, but well, part of when you ask Democrats about jobs, they say, let's start with the minimum wage increase. That's debatable. Do we raise it to 13? Do we raise it to 15? I just sometimes get the idea that Democrats don't have agreement over three or four specific job creating plans in Wisconsin. It seems to change every 6 months, every 9 months.
And only because we're running short on time, and we talked earlier about the transportation budget, you also said that Democrats don't have a clear proposal. This is what we need to do to get out of the transportation budget deficit.
Oh, they're saying if we would join with Republicans on finding revenue, tax increases or fee increases, but only if the Republicans are there, we would join them. Why should we go marching out on this ledge that voters may hold against us on November 8th?
I see. Ann in Monona is with us. Hi, Ann.
Hi. I just wanted to ask whether Governor Walker's and a bunch of our Republican legislators' signature of the Grover Norquist pledge not to raise taxes, no new taxes, is one of the main reasons for the seemingly illogical refusal to support the public system. Seems to me that fealty to a billionaire, probably from another state, maybe from Orange County, California, or somewhere, shouldn't take precedence over the welfare and well-being of the people of these politicians on state.
And I just want to say that the Grover Norquist pledge was signed a number of years ago, and the turnover that I've seen among Republicans in the legislature is probably half. So I have a question whether the next generation, the current generation of GOP legislators, are bound by that.
We only have a minute to go, Steve. I know you had some other issues that you think are going to be resonating this fall, but I think we only have time for 30 seconds worth of photo ideas. Are the recent rulings going to be a big deal here in Wisconsin?
Well, the Democrats continue to say that the photo ID will disenfranchise minorities and the low incomes. And federal judges now, Judge Peterson, Judge Edelman, have said there are some aspects of the photo ID law that are unconstitutional. So now you have the State Justice Department, the new Elections Commission, and federal judges negotiating the rules for November 8th. And Joy, if I could, I just want to point out that
Very quickly,
Wisconsin Eye is cooperating with Gannett and the Journal Sentinel, and we have a new player. And we more information than ever for voters on candidates is now available on wisi.org.
Good. Thank you very much for being with us.